Now, for something completely different, the broadcasting veteran who taught Joe Rogan absolutely nothing, Brian Wilson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and people of all sexes, and all of you who have already forgotten about the classified documents next to the Corvette, it's time once again for our weekly slide down the razor blade of life, known in better family circles as the Two and Only. Featuring the vocal stylings of former radio and TV talk show host, occasional scribbler of soporific syllogisms, and recent Mensa reject, Brian Wilson, that's me, and best-selling author, armor-piercing opinion writer for the New York Post, and despite his trademark beard and revealing hairline, still a junior fellow on probation with the Libertarian Institute, the captivating and soigné Jim Bovard. Hello, James.
Hey, Brian, thanks for your funny lead-in. It's always good for a hoot.
Well, I was really taken aback seeing the announcement on Twitter that you were still on probation with the Libertarian Institute when they were absconding with all of your written material.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for them to finish the background check.
Well, for yeah, I can see that. Well, I don't know. There's some libertarians I know. You'd put them to shame. That's a pretty good deal. Well, we look forward to that. Anyway, speaking of Twitter, I noticed on Twitter this morning you've been combing the New York Times for exciting and informative explanatory notes to help us appreciate the depth of the indictment.
Oh, yeah. That's, I had some fun. The New York Times was doing a series of analyses of the latest Trump indictment, and they had a very funny one, I thought, on the commenting on the jury pool here in D.C., which I said was the biggest no shit of the Trump indictment. New York Times says that the Trump indictment was returned by a grand jury in D.C. where, quote, jurors may be on average less politically sympathetic to Mr. Trump. Like, damn, you know, thank God for the New York Times. Otherwise, who would know?
I only wish they had put it in bigger print, because there's a lot of people who would have missed that, you know, otherwise. But that, politically sympathetic to Mr. Trump. I'm getting the impression, not to spend too much time on this as things are still developing, I'm getting the impression that this guy Jack Smith isn't getting a lot of love and kudos for the successful prosecutorial potential contained in his recent indictment.
Well, it's a real bifurcation in the response. There's a lot of Trump haters, MSNBC, CNN, Washington Post, you know, the list goes on, who are just kind of praising Smith as the greatest truth teller since Mr. Smith goes to Washington. and the flip side is other folks who are saying it's an outrage, it's a bunch of crap. Maybe it's somewhere in between, I don't know. I mean, it'd be really unwise for people who were trying to defend Trump to say that, you know, it's an outrage to call our former president a liar. This is not solid ground. I mean, Biden and Trump have a lot in common, and one is that they've just shown contempt for the truth, you know, year after year. And it's unfortunate that that the media narrative basically insists on putting a halo over one or the other instead of recognizing, well, both of them have often been political scoundrels.
Yeah, true that. I saw one comment by Glenn Greenwald. He said the newest indictment reads exactly like a jointly written monologue by Joe Scarborough, Chris Hayes, Lawrence O'Donnell, and Jen Psaki.
That's like a very good line.
Yeah, like Jack Smith randomly borrowed from the MSNBC scripts over the past 2 years and just mixed it up like a resistance ad lib. I thought that was pretty cool. But I find that at least the attorneys that you see popping up in different places, except MSNBC and NBC, not that they carried that many, but no one. I understand that those people that are giving the big high fives and backslaps to Jack Smith are partisan and so on. And I guess you'd have to say, in all fairness, that the ones that are shooting them down are equally partisan. But I don't know, the analysis of the legal ramifications of the filing of the indictments doesn't it really does seem to have some major holes in it. But enough of that jazz. I mean, we're, God knows we're going to have plenty of time to get into that. And there's more indictments coming. So, I mean, we've got our work cut out for us. But they, I want to take a second here, though, because of this whole melange of, you know, it's all Trump and the indictments over here, and it's no Biden and the whistleblowers and so on over on this side, which I find to be rather remarkable. But that's that halo swapping that you mentioned, Jim. I want to take a second to direct everybody to jimbovard.com and take a look at this piece that you put up there. Remember the atrocities of the Korean War, not the propaganda. And the this whole thing about the Korean War, how the government, the government's practice of lying to citizens has not only survived, but has been perfected, as I see it, over the last 70 years. And you managed to get all this stuff in under 2,000 words, and everybody gets a real good education in just exactly what was happening. I just wanted to cite one thing that, you know, that basically what I got out of it was our government kills innocent citizens, then lies about it. The lies then serve as precedents, justifying more lies, more killings, more atrocities, more wars. Killing and lying, of course, weren't the only atrocities, and we'll get to them in just a minute. But unless I've made some stupendous miscalculations in all of this, I was wondering if you would it be accurate to say, Jim, that America's involvement in the Korean War, especially as you mapped it out in the piece, served as a template for our involvement in Vietnam, Iraq, and a bunch of all the others?
Yeah, it was a very bad precedent. It should have been recognized as a debacle, but you had the Washington establishment, the Pentagon, maybe the CIA, choosing to paint the war as a victory. Even though, I mean, you got 40,000 American dead, and the final border lines were basically where they were before the war started. It's interesting how facts vanish as time goes on, because at the time that the Korean War was being fought, it was intensely unpopular in this country. It may have been more unpopular than the Vietnam War. But as you know, once the war finished, the armistice was 70 years ago last week. And once it finished, then all of a sudden there was a pause, and you get the usual Washington efforts to kind of, well, it wasn't that bad. And then after a while, well, you know, it was good because we saved democracy and we saved this, and we saved that. And it was by letting the establishment radically change the storyline of that war, it lowered resistance to future wars.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
was especially true for Vietnam, because you had a lot of similarities, and there were plenty of reasons to expect, well, you know, this isn't going to work out well at all. But instead, you know, there was a mythos that the U.S. had never lost a war, that the U.S. had always won its wars. But the Korean War was not a victory. It was a draw, but it was a kind of draw that you get after you, like being in a boxing match, and you get pounded on the ropes for 10 rounds, and then, okay, it's a draw. Okay, fine, but you still lost a lot of blood, and you're really badly bruised.
Well, I'm amazed that you would actually go on public airwaves here, a podcast, and contradict one of our previous presidents, who declared in 2013, on the 50th anniversary, the war was no tie, Korea was a victory, plainly stated there by Barack Obama.
Well, it's based on his military and combat experience.
True that. True that.
Yeah, I mean, there was a sanctimony that I saw some of last week with the Korean War, and I have to admit, I'm somewhat biased on this because my father just barely missed the draft for that war. My father graduated one semester early from college in early 1950, and then raced to get married, and then went and got a job on a farm out in Iowa. And so he was exempt from the draft for the Korean War. A lot of other young Americans were not so lucky. But so, you know, it was his good timing. It was at least he, no, I... That's a, well, no, let's just I'll be, just let's shut just up be and happy not make for, any bad taste jokes, all right?
Well, I just, I'm proud of the fact that he managed to find find comfort and solace on a farm. I mean, that in and of itself shows that there was some good being done, probably just putting churning out chickens and eggs and corn and so on. But the thing I was looking at...
It was pigs is what he's working with.
Pig, so well, even better. But the one thing I noticed in your piece that started to form like the first step in a pattern was pointing out that Harry Truman said that this whole thing was a big surprise when, in fact, they were up on it from even before the beginning, the official beginning. And that's the first step in the pattern that I was looking at that we'll talk about in a minute of how America seems to, America's leaders, presidents, and so on, seem to manage to get their nose into this dirt through lying and duplicity, rather than any sort of threat to national security or any of those old American constitutional reasons to do so.
Yeah, there's the old saying, truth is the first casualty of war, and that was certainly the case with Korea, because the President Truman... you know, what happened on June 25th, 1950, the North Korean army crossed the dividing line between North and South that had been set up after World War II and went charging down towards the South Korean capital. But what they didn't tell the American people at that time, as the late Justin Raimondo of antiwar.com reported, was that in the previous years, the U.S. and the South Koreans had carried out a killing spree that killed tens of thousands of people in North Korea, especially in some of the islands not too far away from that border. And so it was the it was not an unprovoked invasion. And there is just an astounding parallel with that between that and Vietnam and the Gulf of Tonkin incident, because you had the, I guess it was late July, early August, 1964. There was the North Vietnamese allegedly launched two attacks on U.S. Ships in the Gulf of Tonkin. What the Johnson administration didn't tell Americans was that U.S. forces and the South Vietnamese had been doing a series of attacks along the North Vietnamese border, and so there was a provocation again. So,
and how it was covered in the media.
Yeah, well, you know, the Washington Post, they didn't have space on the front page on that one. So, no, I mean, it was the kind of thing that was known by a lot of people in the CIA. And President Johnson is from the secret transcripts or whatever from his Oval Office meetings, asked the people from the Pentagon and maybe the CIA as well in the White House meetings right after the reports of the Gulf of Tonkin incident. He was asking if the U.S. forces had been doing any kind of provocations. I think the name of the program was 34A. And yeah, the U.S. had been going to the hilt on that.
Well, there you have. Well, see, and this is all part of what we'll get to in a minute, is, you know, this pattern of behavior. But back to your Korean piece, another thing that leapt out at me was quoting Biden again last year. During the Korean War, nearly 1.8 million Americans answered the call to serve and defend the freedoms and universal values that the people of South Korea enjoy today, quote unquote. I never knew, first off, that was the job of our armed forces, was to protect the freedoms and universal values of South Koreans.
Well, that's a mystery, you know.
Yeah, I thought the UN handled all that.
There's for foreign policy, especially when the U.S. gets into war, there are so many switcheroos, moral and otherwise, that the politicians do. And part of my frustration is that the media normally lets them get away with almost any kind of scam, as long as they seem patriotic or that they're standing up against bad guys. There's a huge danger that the media accepts the good versus evil storyline that the White House puts out for almost every war. That's the thing we saw when the President Clinton decided to bomb Serbia. It was good versus evil, and that was a bunch of crap in 99.
But the other thing that jumped out at me about that was the idea that 1.8 million young Americans answered the call to serve. They didn't answer the call to serve. They got a damn letter from the draft board saying, get your ass down here. You know, we're going to give you a gun and let you go flop around on this peninsula.
Yeah. this is how presidents have, you know, whitewashed, basically turning young men into military serfs, going back at least to the Civil War. I mean, that was portrayed as a war for freedom. If you look at the draft riots in New York City in July 1863, an awful lot of people in the North did not want to be pulled into that war for freedom. So President Lincoln had to use a great deal of force, and he ended up sending the veterans from Gettysburg to shoot people down in the streets of New York City. But people forget about that.
Yeah, well, it doesn't get a lot of coverage in American history class, I can tell you that.
No.
That's not there. But it kind of reminds me of the quote you put in there from Pete McCloskey, the guy from California. The government will always lie about embarrassing matters. Well, that hasn't stopped. Moving along, when you get finished with the Korean piece, if you go to the one just before that at jimbovard.com, the Iraq War was a systematic atrocity. One of the things I took out of that, Jim, was the fact that it followed pretty much the same pattern of getting into Korea and Vietnam. And so anyway, you've got this little blueprint of, we come up with some cow patty that we use as an excuse to justify going in and shooting people and bombing, killing people and all the rest. And it's all done for God and country. And I just, I don't know. Maybe I didn't take the right thing out of it, but I thought that they seemed to follow the same pattern.
Yes, it's very much the same pattern. It's the same moral pretenses. It's the same circus shell game as far as the rationales for the war. I mean, Bush starts saying, well, they have weapons of mass destruction. Well, it turned out that they didn't. And before that, Bush was blaming Saddam for 9/11, which was always a load of crap. But that was a huge part of their rationale early on to go to war. And, you know, it was important to prevent another 9/11. So we had to go, and topple an Arab dictator who had nothing to do with the war. And then the war was to spread democracy. And, that didn't work out so well. Mm. You had a vast number of innocent civilians getting killed, as well as more than 4,000 American soldiers. And it's just interesting, if you look at the rules of engagement that they followed at times in the U.S. forces, it's hard to separate that from the kind of thing that would have been prosecuted as a war crime if other countries had done it against Americans.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, it would have been too expensive to go after the Saudi Arabians for 9/11, despite the fact that it would have been
Yeah, 15 out of 19 hijackers were Saudis. Yeah.
Just one of those curious little circumstances.
Yeah, you had the Bush administration in late 2002, a congressional investigation concluded, hey, there were a lot of links between the Saudi government bankrolling some of the people that carried out the 9/11 attacks. The Bush administration covered that up, and it was covered up until 2016. And the reason for that was that the Bush people wanted to vilify Iraq, and if they were honest about the Saudi role in 9/11, well, I guess it doesn't make much sense to bomb Baghdad, does it?
Yeah. Now there you go. And the idea of weapons of mass destruction, I remember thinking, so what are we going to give this? So what has he got to deliver them? An aluminum bateau and a 25 horsepower Evinrude. He's going to come putting across the ocean. I mean, it was so ridiculous on its face. But this all slides into another column, another story that serendipitously appeared, within this 24-48-hour period by Paul Sperry, and you and I talked about him and his work. The article, if you want to look it up, it's on Zero Hedge, Deception by Redaction, talking about FBI and FISA abuses. And again, this follows a pattern, more specifically, in where the FBI gets all warm and snuggly with the WAPO to put out a story, and then it magically disappears later on when the lights come on. I just thought that that was really, really rather amazing that as long as the individuals from the Trump administration are the ones getting beaten up and so on, then we can have this fall to roll, in the newspaper. But when this whole business came to light, that was all of a sudden the Post pulled the story.
Yeah, well, and it's funny that the FBI chose to redact the passage in its FISA search warrants, in which it said it relied on the Washington Post as a source to justify this massive surveillance operation against a Trump presidential campaign official. So, I mean, the relying on the Washington Post, when the Washington Post is basically relying on a bunch of BS from the Hillary Clinton campaign or the Democratic Party operatives, I mean, it makes a complete travesty of FISA. But this is what the this is what they did. But there have been so many exposés of how the FBI corrupted the FISA process 2016, 2017, and it's going on now because they've misused FISA to go after so many innocent Americans.
Yeah, well, the story pointed out that, and I saw part of this, was Christopher Wray, the FBI honcho, testifying before one of the congressional committees, and they asked him specifically about the FISA abuse and all that. Oh, yeah, I've put in more than 40 different adjustments and changes, and we got all that cleared up. We were bad boys. We've learned our lesson. We're not going to do this anymore. Obviously, I'm paraphrasing. When, in fact, they found out that, indeed, they were still screwing around with the FISA applications, while at the same token begging and pleading Congress to renew the whole apparatus that has the FISA court and in it, so that they get this is very important, this is very utilitarian, very useful in fighting terrorism, and so on. So says Christopher.
Yeah,
Wray.
I mean it's a total outrage. So I just a question. I've got leaf blowers outside my window from the Homeowners Association.
No, I think it's it adds a
it
certain
adds. Okay,
folksy.
That's fine. That's great.
Yeah.
Hey, it proves that they're out to get me, you know?
Yeah.
I always suspected it. And they wait until I'm on their Brian Wilson podcast, and then they make the noise. It's a conspiracy. I knew it.
It's obvious. They probably got a FISA warrant to be able to come out there at this time. I wouldn't buy that at all. But,
well, it's pretty easy for them to get a FISA warrant for people who have been denounced by the FBI and the Justice Department tried to silence. So
there you go. I mean, you certainly have your countenance wallpapering the walls of certain aspects of the FBI and other government agencies over there with you got Valentine's and all sorts of things. Just the only thing you want to remember, folks, if you're at the airport and you see Jim Bovard in line, don't get near him when he gets near the TSA counter. That'd be a very bad thing.
That's good advice. Going back to those FISA recent abuses, there was that report that came out in May that said that the FBI had presumed effectively that any American suspected of supporting the January 6th Capitol clash forfeited their right to privacy, because you had the FBI going and targeting without a warrant over 20,000 people tied to January 6th when there were only 2,000 who went inside the Capitol that day.
Well, I got to tell you that that's a subject that I'd like to discuss at some point. But I think the atrocity that there are right now, there are still individuals in solitary confinement in some butthole place underneath some building in Washington that went for a walk that day. They didn't kill anybody. They didn't break anything. They were, in some cases, actually shown in the door by Capitol Police. And the fact that they're just moldering down, I just find that they have no access to legal assistance or anything. I just find it the fact that that's happening in the home of the brave, land of the free, I just think is beyond appalling. But
I've been amazed at how they've charged over 1,000 people with January 6th offenses. There were some people who should have been charged. I mean, there was doing violence. Doing unprovoked attacks on the police. Fine, book them. But for grandmothers who just happen to walk through an open door, that's an outrage. There are a lot of sentences on that January 6th stuff that have been outrages. But folks, they haven't noticed, but some of the judges, and even in D.C., the federal judges, have gone lightly on a lot of the people who've been convicted and have not thrown them in jail and forever. So, but there have been so many miscarriages of justice. I agree completely.
Yeah, well, I just think that some of the people that got to walk were actually the, you know, the FBI agents that were there undercover, you know, that ones that got the wink and the nod. But maybe I'm too sarcastic to whatever for that. But it's the bottom line is what you just said is, you know, there's so many and it's so bad. And the only other thing I can say is it just astounds me that for all these chest beaters on the Republican Party that get outraged on so much of this other stuff, I don't see them working their butts off to get these people out or do anything to get that thing reconciled one way or the other. There are people down there guilty of something like trespassing, you know, and how long has it been, you know, they've been in that situation?
Been a long time.
Long time, too long. Well, anyway, I see that once again the grains of sand have made it through our egg timer, indicating another hard-boiled episode of The Two and Only has mercifully come to its welcome conclusion. Make a note to join us here next week to see what the State of the Union might be by then. Meanwhile, be sure to pay frequent visits to jimbovard.com. Check out that Korean piece. And brianwilson.net. I don't know what the hell is up there. But by next week, I'll have come up with some good reasons why you should do this. And, oh, and sign up for a free subscription to my Substack columns, Brian Wilson Writes, and you'll never miss a syllable or another episode of The Two and Only. You can take that as a promise or a threat. For the hegemonious James Bovard and our elucidated engineer and technophobe Joe Ted, Brian Wilson's my name and shall remain so until futile notice. Pull the plug, Joe.